Run DNA has an extensive range of running and walking footwear. Trusted by podiatrists and physiotherapists, the Run DNA fitter's advice is second to none. Pop into Run DNA, 20 Manton Street, Hindmarsh, or 391 Fullerton Road, Fullerton. They're open 7 days with plenty of off-street parking. If you walk or run, you need to Run DNA.
It's the 17th of July. Welcome to Hooked on Sport. I'm Wallace Long, and welcome to Ben Hook.
Oh, Wallace, g'day. I am so excited. We've got an amazing new story to tell about our podcast. Of course, it's been a really sad 24 hours in South Australian sport. We will get to that. You have a big reveal for us. There is something very exciting happening as we chat.
It's an amazing day for us. We're very excited by this news. We've had some highlights. We've had our very first show. We had our 50th show. That interview you did with Bruce McAvaney was legendary. And on top of that, we now have a new co-host. We have Sophie Hilditch. Welcome, Sophie.
Thanks, guys. I'm so excited to be here. I'm so excited to come onto the show. I think you interviewed me back in March or Feb, and I've been gunning to come back on.
I don't know how we found the budget for it, Wallace, but we have done. We met the numbers that we needed to meet when we spoke with Sophie's people. Of course, Sophie, very heavily, not just involved, but a bit of a star of South Australian sport, Wallace. Former South Australian golfer, now one of the most well-known pennant players, a former state junior hockey player, knows her stuff. I am looking forward to locking horns with you, Soph. Just tell us a bit about your background. You're a lawyer as well, but just tell us a bit about who you are and what we're going to expect from you over the coming weeks.
Yeah, so I've had a bit of an interesting journey. I've come from a family who just loves sports, so I've kind of dabbled in everything. I was a hockey player straight off the bat, basically. Like you said, got into a junior state hockey team. No idea how I did that, but I was pretty happy with it. And I eventually, when I was about 18 and studying in year 12, and I was focusing on my studies, trying to get into law school, gave hockey a bit of a rest, and my golf club asked if I wanted to join the pennant team, and Ben, I got smoked in my first ever pennant match. I had no business being there. I think it was something like a 8-7 or just disgustingly bad, and I caught the bug. I could not wait to get back on that course, and I have not stopped ever since. I've fallen in love with the game. I've fallen in love with the connectivity of the sport, playing of all different genders, all different ages, everyone. I just completely love it, and I love what the sport's given me as well.
You said your family love sport. They weren't too bad at sport themselves, were they? Just give us a little bit of your heritage, please, Soph.
Yeah, so I come from a family of cricketers, actually, Ben. My grandfather played Australian Test cricket, and so did my dad, and even my brother dabbled in the sport, and actually he's just come back from coaching the Netherlands cricket side, who are actually having a pretty good season yet again.
So you didn't name names here, but I'm happy to do that. Bob Simpson is your grandfather, of course, a legend of Australian cricket. Your father, Andrew Hilditch, Australian vice captain and a great opening batter in his day. So you certainly got some sporting pedigree there, mate.
I do indeed, which actually, to be fair, Ben, gives me a bit of competitiveness, and I can't wait to go head on head with you in some of these sporting debates. You don't know this, but I've been driving in my car listening to this podcast. We've been having some pretty, really harsh debates, but you've never been able to return the serve. So I'm keen to see what you've got to come back with.
I've always made the point, Sophie, that I do enjoy talking to intelligent people who disagree with me, and I firmly have you in that field. So Wallace, why don't we get into it, mate?
Sounds like a great idea. Now, Hooker, you did mention that it's been a sad day yesterday in South Australian sport.
Yeah, I did. And it is worth touching on the great Barry Robran, a legend of the Australian Football Hall of Fame, a legend of the Sport SA Hall of Fame, passed away yesterday morning, age 77. A champion of South Australian sport, probably the greatest Australian rules footballer in history. I'm sure there are some Lee Matthews people who might argue the toss on that, but certainly from a South Australian perspective, the number one, Malcolm Blight is in that conversation, as is Russell Ebert. But I think most people would agree that Barry Robran, the North Adelaide and South Australian legend, is the number one. A couple of quick stories that I want to share with you guys about Barry. I think you've all read articles that have come in the Advertiser over the course of the last day. And all of them have talked about not only what a super footballer he was, but what an incredibly humble human being he was. And I can remember there was a period of time when North Adelaide was absolutely on the bones of its backside. They were talking about shutting the doors, Soph. It was that bad. And he was actually working for the club in a marketing capacity. And I rang the club one day because they had a lunch on for Kerry O'Keefe and a few of my mates were going to attend the lunch. Rang the club and the phone answered, North Adelaide Football Club, Barry speaking.
Oh, kidding.
And it just took me a bit of a second to work out what was going on. But Barry, so dedicated to the club, a legend of this organisation. But there he was acting as the receptionist, answering the phone. Now, he wouldn't have remembered me from back then. But as you know, I spent a fair bit of time working in media. And I can share with you now, Barry would routinely get in contact with me via email to share with me stories. Sometimes they were about lawn bowls, where he's very heavily involved in the later part of his life. And sometimes it was around SANFL football. And I, from Barry, got two of the most greatest banger stories about South Australian football for two grand finals in a row. The 2018 grand final, many people would remember that year as the 2018 19th man saga, where the North Adelaide Football Club in the preliminary final had 19 men on the field for a period of time. Well, they went on and beat Norwood in the grand final. Max Thring was the captain. His grandfather was a guy called David Birchall. Now, David Birchall was actually the president of North Adelaide in the era that Barry played, between 68 and 71. But the story of David Birchall is something else. Lost a leg in a train accident as a teenager at 16. Went on to become one of the great divers. So we're talking about deep sea divers, discovered wrecks, the HMAS Perth, the HMAS Houston. Incredible story, David Birchall. And then the following year, when Glenelg beat Port Adelaide in the 2019 grand final, he explained to me that Michael Virgin had missed the North Adelaide grand final the previous year, left North, went to Glenelg and won the premiership with Glenelg while his dad, Lee, was actually the president of North Adelaide. So imagine that, being the president of a footy club. Your son gets kicked out essentially by the coach. You stay there as the president of the football club and see him go and play for the mob down the other side of the road and win a premiership as well. And Barry told me both of those stories. So, look, I know that's, I guess, a bit about my relationship with Barry, but I mean, that really is how everyone shares their stories, isn't it? But he is going to be incredibly sadly missed, certainly from my perspective, but absolutely from anyone who has had their fingerprints in football. Barry Roperin is a sad loss. Vale, Barry Roperin.
Sophie and Ben, let's get into Fair or Farce.
So straight off the bat, the Australian versus West Indies test, flowing on from that. Pink ball cricket has had its day. Fair or farce?
Fair, Soph. I really think that this might have been the death of pink ball cricket. And it pains me to say that because I come from Adelaide, which sort of gave birth to day-night test cricket with a pink ball. But this has been an unmitigated disaster. Now, granted, we've seen two very good attacks. The Australian attack is world class, and the West Indian fast bowlers are genuinely good bowlers who can bowl excellent spells for a period of time. Now, okay, so if we accept that they're good attacks, those two, that match, four innings, has racked up 40 wickets for 516. The West Indies lost 20 for 170, including a second innings of 27, the second lowest test score in history. And I remind everyone that India 4 years ago, in the Adelaide conditions, were all out for 35. So it is very, very difficult to get conditions that are playable. It's hard enough in Adelaide with every advantage imaginable. So we're asking countries like Jamaica and Bangladesh, Zimbabwe, to be able to come up with conditions that replicate what we've got in Adelaide. We've got some really big advantages in Adelaide with pink ball cricket. Great climate. We've got more daylight. It's always played in December. It's the longest month of the year. We have great lights. We have high-tech management. We've got huge staff. And that's really difficult to replicate around the rest of the world. And I just don't think that this format of the game can be the purview of wealthy white countries. I mean, I would argue that this was supposed to make cricket more accessible to people, and it's potentially having the opposite effect. The other point I'll make, the lights in Jamaica, they were new, they were given the green light, but I thought they were flat out dangerous. Alex Carey was hit with a bouncer first ball that I reckon he flat out did not see, and he ended up suffering from concussion. Now, I just don't reckon that is acceptable in the modern level of cricket. So as much as it pains me to say, because I've really enjoyed seeing the pink ball develop in Adelaide, quite frankly, if we never saw another pink ball test, I'd be comfortable with it. Soph, what do you think?
I've gone fast, Ben. So straight off the bat, we're already disagreeing. Obviously, I completely understand where you're coming from. The West Indies test was, look, it was a shambles, wasn't it? We can't really say anything else other than that. It was a complete shambles for the players. And look, I agree with you. It did look at times a little bit dangerous. It's developing, isn't it? The pink ball is still developing. It's come a long way. And the Adelaide Test is just a credit to that. I mean, look at what the Adelaide Test brings to the city, everything that's brought to the city. It's such a crowd pleaser. And I mean, actually interesting, the tactics that come with the pink ball and teams, the tactics surrounding it is completely interesting. Now, I don't think you compare a pink ball and I don't think you can call it a test match, right? I mean, it's rarely ever going to get over 3 days. It almost becomes a shorter form of the game and a completely different form of the game. But I still think it's a form of the game that brings something to cricket and to spectators and maybe brings in a newer and fresher crowd like myself.
Your tactics point is well made. I understand it. I've actually heard people, though, make the argument that it should be like the olden days in uncovered wickets, when if you got on a wet wicket, you'd reverse the order, you'd put your bowlers in first. I mean, my argument against that is we covered wickets for a reason, right? I mean, we wanted to make the conditions more playable and more fair for everyone involved. We wanted to give fast bowlers an opportunity, but we also wanted to make it reasonable for batting. I don't think we want to go back to uncovered wickets. And that's kind of what we've done with the pink ball and with day-night play. We've created this artificial environment where it becomes very, very difficult for batting. And I understand, yes, a change of tactics, and that's interesting. But when it gets to the point of being dangerous, I think we've got to query it. Yes, okay, Adelaide, you and I, South Australians, and we've loved what we've been able to see in Adelaide, but that's so difficult to replicate everywhere else, and it shouldn't just be for us. Either it's got to be for everyone, it's got to be workable everywhere, or I just query whether it's workable anywhere at all.
But isn't there an opportunity for Adelaide and other countries to maybe start sharing and actually become like a bit more inclusive, and we start sharing what the tactics are, sharing how we're developing those pitches? And then maybe it can actually improve in other countries. Now, I get what you're saying, because obviously the temperature and the grass and everything is going to be completely different elsewhere. But I still think there's room to develop it.
You know what, Wallace? One fair or farce into my conversations with Sophie, and I'm probably going to have to take an L first up. I reckon she might, even if she hasn't won comprehensively, I reckon she might have done me on points there. We're going to move on, but that is something that we're going to discuss down the track. I want to turn to something that is a little bit more in your wheelhouse. Sophie, shut the books. Grace Kim's final three holes of the Amundi Evian Championships is already Australian sport's greatest moment of the year. Fair or farce?
Completely fair. Absolutely fair. I don't actually know what could stand up to Grace Kim's final three holes. Now, for the listeners that haven't actually seen this, Ben, I think I just need to give a little quick recount of it.
Please do, because I'm looking forward to hearing it, even though I did see it live.
Oh, I saw it completely live. I woke up specifically to go see Grace, to witness her on her final stretch. And I've got to admit, Ben, I've just got to come back to the 12th hole where she doubled it and looked like she was completely out of it. And her fellow Australian Minji Lee looked like she was going to make a late charge. And I was actually thinking it's going to be a Minji Lee win here. But regardless, Grace Kim has just gone and it was just such a competitor. She stripes her ball straight down the middle on the 18th hole in regular play. She hits this four hybrid to a foot. Ben.
180-odd yards out.
180 yards, I reckon. And she taps it in for eagle. And she quite literally taps it in. I think she could have done that one-handed and it still would have gone in. Now, her playing partner there was actually in the lead by two shots. She chose to lay up, Ben. Now, interesting decision, but at the same time, I think if she hadn't chosen to lay up and she's gone straight into the water. So, again, this green is surrounded by water on the right-hand side. And if she'd gone into the water, we would have been thinking, why the hell didn't she lay up? Mm-hmm. So I don't want to be too critical of her here. She puts it to roughly about 10 feet. And to be honest, she misreads and she also just doesn't quite get the weight of the putt and she misses it for Grace and her to then enter a playoff. Now, this playoff was unbelievable. Remember, Grace Kim has only been on the LBGA Tour for 3 years. 2023 was her first year and by far her best year. She won an LPGA event in that year, but she has never top 10'd in a major. So this girl, this young girl of only about 24, is standing on this tee of this playoff against Gino Titicum, who is experienced. Again, she hasn't won a major yet.
Is she the world number one?
I don't think she's world number one yet, but I could be wrong in that, so I don't want to, you know, jump to that. But
I'm going to fact check that while you're telling
me. Yeah, it would be great
story.
If you could fact check that. I'm not 100% sure. And Titicum actually has to hit her ball first, which I think puts so much pressure on Grace Kim. Again, she stripes it down the middle. Grace Kim hits a great drive. I think from memory, she was actually just in the short rough, just on the
first cut.
First cut, yep. Now, Ben, there's no denying she hits a woeful shot. It looks like an absolute toe cut. And as one of the Australian spectators watching her, it's in the piss, which I thought was just a great comment. Now, she has to take, obviously, a drop, which is a penalty stroke. She's got a chip straight over the water from about 40 yards, and she chips the ball in. Never seen anything like it.
1 in 100 shot?
1 in 100. 1 in 100. And then her playing partner, Tidakum, again, has hit about a 6-iron. She's a bit longer than Grace. She was just behind the pin and she chips it to about 10 foot. And all credit to her, she then holds the 10 foot for birdie, which was unbelievable. So we're back to a playoff. We're back to the 18th hole again. And I probably should have mentioned this as a par 5, which listeners should probably be able to tell from saying eagles. Tidakum, again, straight down the middle. Grace Kim follows straight down the middle, this time on the fairway. She then hits again the 4 hybrid, which is the third time she has hit this club, and she puts it to 10 foot.
And just as worth pointing out as well, when you've had such a poor swing like she had in the first hole of the playoff, pulling the same club out again, you're worried about it, aren't you? You've been there.
100%. And to actually make matters worse, someone started talking in her backswing and she had to pull away from the shot. Pull away from it.
That's right.
Unbelievable. She's never top 10 finished in a major, and she has the patience and the courage to step away from the freaking ball. I've just never seen anything like it. And then to put it to 10 foot. Tidakum actually puts it in a pretty similar spot to where she did in the first playoff hole. So she's chipping yet again. And I don't want to get onto it, but she tried to take an interesting ruling there, actually, with some bugs crawling on her ball, which I thought, if this gets away, I'm livid.
You'll be outraged.
I'll be absolutely outraged. Anyway, again, she chips it to probably about 10 foot, another solid chip, but Grace Kim steps up and holds this putt center cup.
15 feet?
15 feet. Unbelievable. Now, sorry, Ben, I know you were trying to jump in there.
I'm not. I'm enjoying the story.
All I want to say is the composure from a 24-year-old Grace Kim is unbelievable. I actually saw she posted on Instagram recently, her last round in Australia before she headed off to Europe was at Avondale, her home club, who must just be ecstatic right now.
Yeah.
It was about 6 over the card. So I don't know where she got the confidence to go do what she did, but it's unbelievable. But do you know what I actually thought was more impressive? The Australians that had played in the same events, obviously competing against Grace Kim, and the Australians, to be fair, had a very good showing at the Evian Championship. The support and the excitement from the Australians running onto that green, I mean, it sent chills through my body. I've never seen anything like it. The pride to be an Australian in that moment was just unbelievable.
The fist pump I gave when that chip went in is pretty spectacular. It was almost as good as the chip itself. She's gone from ranked 96 in the world to ranked 25. Do you know Tidakul ranked 2 in the world? So that was the company she was keeping. Sophie, she'll turn up at the Australian Open at Cooyonga in 7 months' time in March to play the Women's Australian Open, a place where she's won in the past playing against you.
Yeah, 2018 Australian Open. Now, I don't know if we can call it playing against me. She obliterated me. I was present at the tournament.
You were in the field.
I was in the field. I wasn't there on day 3, but I was in the field, that's for sure. And look, I actually think it's going to be hard to beat her, I reckon. Evian Championship, it's hard to tell from the TV, but there's heaps of slopes everywhere. And the shots that you have to play and the patience you have to play, knowing that it's going to cut, knowing it's going to hook on what kind of slopes you're hitting off, lower shots, higher shots. She's got all the shots and she now has the confidence. I would be wary to watch out for her.
Well, Soph, you've gone fair and I cannot disagree. I don't have an argumentative bone in my body. That is going to be the story of the year, the moment of the year. It was quite incredible. I tell you what, Soph, with everything that you've given us there, you are going to be the go-to expert on golf in this state going forward. I'm absolutely confident.
The next one for you, Ben. Tania Obst has Thunderbirds in finals again. She's the best coach in SA sport right now. Fair or farce?
Oh, I'll go fair-ish. Can I go fair-ish? I think that's fair. I reckon right now she's running rings around the AFL guys. So Matthew Nix and Ken Hinckley are both very, very good coaches who get inordinate levels of support. They've got defensive coaches, forward coaches, midfield coach, development coach, welfare coach. You name it, they've got the support. Tanya has one assistant. That's Kathy Fellows, who I must make the point, is a secret genius. And then Erin Bell is her shooting coach, and that's it. I suspect that there are two competitors for Tanya's throne. That's Ryan Harris, the South Australian cricket coach, who's done an incredible job in year one, taking them from laughingstock to bloodstock, hasn't he? I mean, two titles in 1 year for a state that's been just bereft of titles. Mm-hmm. The other one that I've just put on the map here is Trish Adams, South Australia and Brighton lacrosse coach. She just wins titles for fun. Brighton have won the last seven straight state league women's titles. They've won two of the last three national titles that she has led that team as well. So, yeah, Trish Adams, Ryan Harris on the podium, but I'm going to put Obst at the top there. She is the queen. Chicks and Trish can fan her with a fig leaf and feed her with grapes while she sits at the top on that throne. She has done an incredible job, two straight titles, and now back in with a live chance at a third. They'll play the Vixens at home. I expect them to win. If they get the Swifts in a preliminary final away, the Swifts are wobbling. I like their chances there. And then they get the Fever, who have just blown away everyone. But the Fever on a neutral court, I reckon, might be vulnerable. Final weekly segment on Hooked on Sport is Hookie's Power Rankings. So if I'm going to get you to help me out with these over the course of the coming weeks, but essentially the way it works is we'd look at every South Australian sporting team, either in State League or National League, and we rank them according to how they're tracking over the most recent weeks. It does bounce around a fair bit. In fact, two clubs that had the week off and they've been booted out. West Adelaide Women's Soccer Team, out. I reckon they'll be bouncing back in at some point. Burnside Hockey Club, out. The men, they've been so good, but they had two buys in a row, Burnside. Another story for another day. At number 10, going down from six, is the Brighton Lacrosse Club. We talked about Trish Adams. They're, I think, 8 from 8 at the moment, and they will probably win the premiership again. I've got new blood in, guys. At number 9, it's Old Collegians in the Rugby Union South Australia competition. They're 10-0 after their first 10 games. And listen to their points differential. In those 10 matches, they're plus 390 points. It's incredible. Adelaide Hockey Club, the women, are in 8th. Metro Stars, who lead the NPL soccer competition, have dropped from 4th to 7th. They also had a week off. There were some state games going on in soccer over the last week. Contacts Netball Club have jumped up from 9th to 6th. They're top and again clear now, 1 week out from finals. I've got two NBL 1 Central teams at 5th and 4th. Forestville, who are now top, they beat South. They've come from 10th to 5th. And Central District, they're great rivals at the moment, beat Norwood. They've gone from 8th to 4th. The Thunderbirds are in 3rd. They've got an elimination final against the Vixens after their 4-goal win over the Lightning. They've been on fire the last 6 weeks. And as we spoke about before, Soph, they're a big chance of winning a third straight title. Wouldn't that be a story? The Crows are in 2nd, 11-point winners over Western Bulldogs. They've won 8 of their last 10. Now top 2 is a huge possibility for them. And the number 1 team in the competition of Hookie's Power Rankings right now is the Sturt Football Club in the SANFL. They beat Sturt by 74 points. They're 13-0. They've won 26 straight minor round games. So you've probably sort of record you've had in pennant golf in your day. I reckon this is going to prompt David Kosh to argue about the SANFL rules. That normally happens when these sorts of losses occur to Port Adelaide. So Sturt, the number 1 in Hookie's Power Rankings. So get ready to start playing a part in those. You can argue with them. You can argue with me about them as well. Hey, Wallace, so much fun having Soph, wasn't it?
Oh, it's brilliant. I really enjoyed the Feral Fast. Great to have you on board.
It was good. It was pretty good. Let's not give it too much of a pump up just yet. We want to see her keep lifting her game. I mean, she's going to have to if she wants to wrestle with the likes of me.
Yeah, Wallace, you got to play a bit dirty when you're coming across one of the best. That's all I've got to say.
Now, Hookie, you're in for your marathon. What are we, 2 weeks away?
Yeah, we are. And Sophie might not be aware of this. I'm running my first ever marathon on August 3. Since we spoke, I did my longest run in the preparation, Wallace. It was 32 Ks. My goodness, it was sobering. I was out trying to do what I think is probably a pretty reasonable clip. I was aiming for about 3:45, but I got about 23, 24 Ks in, and I thought, what am I doing out here? So I got the 32 done, but it was brutally uncomfortable, and all I can think about is, how am I going to get another 10 out of this poor old body? So, yeah, disappointing, I've got to say. So, of all the disappointing sporting performances over the last 7 days, mine might have been the worst last Thursday trying to run 32 Ks.
I bet. Would have loved to have seen it.
Oh, no. Yeah. In fact, you'll appreciate this, Wallace. My mum rang about half an hour after I'd finished the run, and I said, what are you ringing for? She said, I'm just checking you're all right. I said, what do you mean? She said, I saw you running on Unley Road. You looked awful. That's the support I need.
Oh, when your own mum's giving you crap, that's not good, Ben.
Bad news. Yeah. So anyway, Wallace, outside of that, I mean, I feel like I've got the it was K's in the legs, but yeah, just finishing this marathon now was really the only goal. I'm not too bothered about time because I've struggled the last couple of months.
Now, so what have you got coming up sporting-wise for yourself?
Not too much. I'm actually just competing in the four-ball better ball on Saturday at golf, just a little local tournament instead, which I'm actually looking forward to. I'm playing with a new member of the club, so I can't wait to get to know her a little bit better.
Brilliant. Excellent.
Isn't that nice the way she's just bringing along the new members, the veteran in relative terms, Sophie Hilditch?
Welcome on board, Sophie. Fantastic to have you on board.
No, thanks so much, guys.
We'll step it up on her next week, mate.
Okay, you guys have a great weekend and we'll look forward to catching up next week.
If you're enjoying this podcast, I'd encourage you to take a listen to Beyond the Club. It's a project I've been working on with Flinders University. Now, I co-host it with Professor Sam Elliott, and we break down all the latest research on how to maximise the experience of junior and club athletes. There's a range of resources, special guests, and cutting-edge info on how you can make your club a safer, happier place for your kids and their club mates. Beyond the Club, wherever you get your podcasts.